This is the Inside Pitch with Peter Caliendo. Innovative thoughts from baseball's best coaching minds from around the world. Brought to you by lineupmedia.fm. Now your host, former USA Baseball national team coach, Peter Caliendo.
Okay, everyone, we are back and we want to welcome you to the Inside Pitch. Before we begin the second part of our show, we'd like a little bit of your help. I know that a lot of you go on Amazon and you buy a lot of stuff. If you could really help us out, if you're going to go on Amazon and buy anything, first of all, if you'd like to buy my new book, Youth Baseball Drills, that's on Amazon. But if you buy anything else, do us a favor. First, go to our website and click on Amazon banner. It doesn't cost you anything, gives us credit, and helps you keep the show going. So you can go to Amazon.com and help us out. We love receiving your emails and what you thought about the show, coaching questions or recommendations on guests for the show, anything you'd like to talk to us about, email us, and we'll have all that information at the end of the show for you, how to get a hold of us. Lastly, if you'd like to know more about my five-set baseball coaches instructional DVD specifically, designed for our volunteer coaches to help them run their practices. It has over 100 games, drills, and skills to help you organize your practice. Email me at peter@insidepitchpodcast.com. Again, that's peter@insidepitchpodcast.com. Now, if you do that today and mention this show, I'll throw in two more DVDs for free. Okay? So we hope to hear from you. Now, let's get back with Mike Carlucci. And we're going to continue the second half of our show. Mike, you've got the mic. Take it away.
All right. Give me that microphone back, Pete. Hey, by the way, folks, that book Pete mentioned that he wrote and he has on sale for you, get that book. I'm not a reader because I never have time. I'm usually just, I get all my knowledge now via the internet. Once again, technology takes over. But I did take time out to read his book. It's fantastic. It's a must for parents who are getting their kids into baseball, and of course you young coaches out there, get Pete's book. It's fantastic. And in fact, I have the book right here in front of me here, and I think I'm going to take it with me on my next plane trip, because there's one chapter I kind of want to reread. So anyway, great book, get it, you'll enjoy it. All right, Pete, I'm sorry, Pete, you were going to say?
No, I was going to say I appreciate it. I thought you were going to say you liked my intro where I said, you know, Mike, take over the mic. I thought that was interesting. No pun intended.
You know what? I've heard that so many times in my career that it probably went through one ear, not the other. Anyway, great intro, Pete. Here we go. Good stuff going on here today, folks. Let's keep it going here in the second half. Let's continue on. Of course, we talked earlier about coaching philosophy. Pete hammered on that very well. And, of course, you talked about how coaching has evolved over the years due to the fact of all the distractions and technology that the kids are now got so many options and so many things to do now. So it's good to keep the focus on the great sport of baseball. And Pete covered that. But now let's move on to, as we're going to stay, of course, in our theme of coaching coaches and how important that is. Now, let's talk a little bit of the background that you've been pretty much involved here over the last couple of decades. From 1990 to 96, the International Athletic Foundation was given permission to put together and coach some of the teams that represented the USA in the Pan Am Games at 16 years of age. Kids 16 years old, of course, for 6 years. They won 3 gold and 3 silver medals. How has that influenced your teaching? And what did experience, what experience was put together for that coach and all the coaches and players that were involved?
Well, you know, that was a special time, and you know, I guess in my life, because it started to broaden my horizon a little bit. Because now we're talking about international baseball, and the game became bigger because you know there's over 120 countries currently playing baseball around the world, and you know when you're sitting in a in Chicago or somewhere else, you know, you don't realize how many players there are out there, or how many coaches there are, how many different techniques there are. And at that time, between 1990 and 96, I got to give a shout out to my good friend Kevin Whitworth from St. Louis. He was heading up the program, him and Dick Birmingham. And they gave, were nice enough to get me involved and give me the ability to put the program together. At that time, Dick Case, the president of USA Baseball, a great friend who passed away, gave us permission because the USA national team, we didn't have a national team at 16, but they wanted to have one. So they gave us permission to put the team together on a national scale and to compete in the Pan Am game. So that began my career in the selection process. So not only in the development of players early on with the baseball school, but also now with the ability to select players nationally at a higher level, which wasn't easy at the time because we didn't have the technology we have nowadays. And we had to select the best, 15-year-olds, which, were going to turn 16. Those were your freshmen, sophomores in high school, an awkward age at one time. But also we had to select them, put together the best team, and compete against the best teams in the world. Now, we had great coaches, as I mentioned before, but now as a coach, what an experience that is, the ability to be an assistant coach on some of these teams and also be the head guy to put the team together. We were very fortunate, as you mentioned, we won 3 golds, 3 silvers. We've got 24 guys in the major leagues. Currently, Jason Worth probably be a big name. But being around people like that, being around the talent level, being around the experience, and then getting the ability to see the world and understand how the game is played globally. You watch the Japanese, they play a different game. You watch the Cubans, they play a different game. The Dominicans, the Australians, the Canadians, the Taiwanese, they're just different games where you can learn a lot from them. And I think that gave me the ability to increase my knowledge in the game, because now it became a global thing for me. And I was able to pick the brains of coaches internationally. I was able to watch what they do at practice. I was able to, coach with them. So it was a great learning experience for me, and I'll never forget that. And I still continue now, as to go around the world to teach the game of baseball, but also to learn from many people around the world.
What a great thrill to see those players that you coached and saw in the international game that moved on to successful careers professionally. I mean, that's a great thrill. And of course, prior to that, winning those medals and just the quality of the players, the coaching, and the success. It's got to be a thrill. Even, a decade or two goes by and you still feel that action, that excitement. And it feels good for you, doesn't it?
Absolutely. Anytime, and as you know, Michael, because you've been to the Olympics, anytime you could represent your country and you have that, it doesn't matter what country, wherever you come from, you could represent your country and you've got your country's name on your jersey. You're representing a lot of people, a lot of folks, not just to do well because, not everybody's going to win, but also to be a professional, to be first class, to show people how the game is played, to play the game hard all the time. We were teaching our kids to do that, but at the same time, our player, our coaches needed to act the right way also. And I think that's important when it comes to coaching, how coaches act. Michael Jordan said it was the greatest thrill of his lifetime when he represented the USA in the Olympics. So for the greatest player of one sport to say that, you could imagine what it's like for a 16-year-old. Now we go down as young as 12 and 15 on the national team. So you could imagine what it must be like. We always tell players and parents, listen, you get a chance to play for your country, you drop everything at that time. There's that one time that even if you made a commitment with a local team, that they will understand that you're going to break that commitment. That may be the only time you'll break a commitment, but it's a thrill of a lifetime.
Indeed. I mean, I've heard some interviews for some of these players pretty much saying the exact thing you said about dropping everything. Great deals they've signed with a major league club, but they've always said, hey, you know what? I got to stand aside here. Please, don't get mad, but I have to step aside and play for my country. And it's a good feeling indeed. Now, Pete, you are currently and have been over 15 years as the technical commissioner with the World Baseball Softball Confederation, formerly the IBF, the International Baseball Federation. You and I have worked several events together. Now, you have to deal with managers, players prior to the games, and so forth. And how has this impacted your coaching?
Well, it just took us, it took me to another level again, because, being around the coaches or the managers of those national teams allowed me Well, one, it allowed me to pick their brains anytime I could about any situation. Or at times, as you know, I might be working alongside a manager of another team on a technical committee. You and I have worked together, you know, internationally. So, or I might be working with an umpire. You know, recently working the World Baseball Classic, I was working with a scouting supervisor for Major League Baseball, Larry Young from Chicago, a good friend also. But, you know, to be able to work along them and watch how they do things and ask them questions when certain situations happen in games, because, you know, as managers or coaches, we don't know all the rules, which sometimes the umpires don't know all the rules. They've got to revert back to certain rule books. You know, but to be able to pick their brains or and ask them about certain situations, that just make you know, again, makes you a better person, makes you a better coach. And the same thing with watching international competition, just being around it. You just can't help but learn. So, you know, I've been very fortunate, you know, to be able to go around the world and do this. And if it wasn't for this, I don't think I'd be the, you know, the person or the coach or the instructor that I can be, you know, the best, at least the best that I can be. Let's put it that way.
You know, Pete, I was going to ask you about those umpires because they're from all over the globe, all over the world internationally, and they all have different techniques of umpiring. And that must be what... pretty hectic to sit there and meet with these umpires before every game to go over certain things, like you said, different the ways they call strikes and balls and certain things, you know, formations they do. That must be kind of a headache at some time, huh?
Well, it could be, but you know what's great is the WBSC, Gus Rodriguez, our head of umpires, he does a great job because, you know, they train the umpires around the world to prepare themselves for the international competition. So that's something that they really, you know, look into and making sure that the umpires understand, you know, that they don't have their own rules because sometimes, as you know, they can make up their own rules in their own countries. But they need to understand the rules that they're going to follow and the strike zones. And the, probably the toughest part is the communication aspect because you might have a Cuban umpire at second base, a Japanese umpire at first, you know, a Taiwanese umpire behind the plate, an Australian at third base. You know, Australians speak English, but sometimes they have that accent. Something happens and they got to come in and talk about it, or the manager's coming out because he's got a discussion. You know, you got to have interpreters. And for our coaches and players and all that, you know, you need to have a lot of respect for your umpires. One thing I disagree with is when I see a lot of high schools and lower levels, you know, the things that go on with, you know, yelling at umpires and screaming at them about the strike zone. You know, they're human beings. They're trying to do their best. You know, if you're worried about all those calls, maybe you should be worried about making your team a little bit better. And that would, you know, you wouldn't have to worry about all those calls. Because I can tell you this, I didn't argue much on calls. You know, I talk about it. I get, you know, I try to get in their heads once in a while, but I'd always be respectful of the umpires because, you know, they're the ones that are making the ultimate calls in the long run.
Right. I mean, we've seen so many games, umpires, referees that, as a some calls may be questionable to some maybe not. But like you said, if your team has better players and playing the game correctly, you play to win and your team's not winning, they're always going to take it out on the man in blue. So, you know.
Yeah, that's society today a little bit, isn't it, Mike? I mean, we tend to blame somebody else all the time when sometimes we need to look at ourselves.
Yeah, politically speaking, of course, but we'll do that for another show, right? Anyway, Pete, currently, you are the VP of the International Sports Group, the nonprofit organization which hosts coaching seminars around the world, for over 25 years or so. Now, this is a volunteer position for all involved with the ISG. Why is this important to you?
Well, it varies because of what we talked about before. And Tom O'Connell, currently our president of ISG, Bill Arce, God bless him, he passed away. He was the founder of ISG, great guy, passed away just this year. You know, when they put all this together, because I've been with them for about 10 years, the goal, again, is to impact coaches worldwide, to increase the game, you know, the participation in the game, because as we talked about, better coaches will make for a better game, will make for better players, will make for, you know, kids to play longer, to get new kids to play the game. So we felt that, you know, internationally, that was going to be important to make sure we grow the game properly. And that's our passion, is working with coaches, making sure the game's, you know, going in the right direction. And then the International Sports Group as a nonprofit has allowed many coaches from all aspects, from the major league level to college to high school, to travel around the world and be part of that coach's program. So we have speakers that we pick from all levels that come with us in the off season, and they'll go to, you know, some guys will go to, whether it be Italy or whether it be, you know, Belarus or Japan or just anywhere around the world, and we put on these seminars. And guess what? It's a learning experience for us also, because now we're interacting with different coaches at different levels. You know, I remember being with Ron Washington in Italy, traveling with him, formerly the, you know, the manager of Texas Rangers. He's currently a third base coach with the Oakland A's. Great teacher, great instructor. You know, how could you not learn from him when you're spending time with him during that time? So this allows coaches to mingle with other coaches from around the world and to learn from those coaches also. So it's just one big education that we're supplying worldwide, and we're going to continue to do it because we're seeing great results.
Now, amazingly, you have coached in Japan and a lot of the Japanese players as well. Of course, Japan is a very traditional country and sport with very little change. Why are they doing so good? And how can we learn from the Japanese game, and what can they do to become better as well?
Well, it's amazing. I love Japan. I love the people. I love how they do things. And you know what? We can almost look at the Asians in general, but I just think they do things well. Now, I've been criticized for this on Facebook. I've been criticized in other areas because, you know, I bring up how well the Japanese do things. That's not demeaning how we do things in the U.S. Obviously, we've got great coaches in the United States. We've got great programs. You know, can we do things better? Absolutely. We talked about it earlier. We can do a much better job at helping our volunteers become better coaches. But at the Japanese level, what I love about the Japanese, and I think we can learn a lot from them, they do things well, and then they do some things, obviously, that are not so well. We're going to talk about those. But the things they really do well is that they respect the game. When they play the game, it's all about respect. They respect their opponent. They're, you know, it's not weakness. Some people look at it, respect, you know, as weakness sometimes. Well, that's not weakness because, you know, they may, and I'll give you a quick example, Mike, and you've seen this. Sometimes they may hit a batter and they tip their cap, you know, they take their cap off and bow to the batter. What they're saying, sorry, it didn't mean to hit you.
Right.
You know, we see that as a sign of weakness, but yet they won the World Baseball Classic twice, and they've got some great players. It's not a sign of weakness. It's actually a sign of respect for the game, but they'll play the game hard. And the other thing is, I remember taking a White Sox spring training. We took a Japanese team, about 18 to 22-year-olds. And at that time, you know, you could show up to a game against the White Sox rookie team or single A team, and we might be winning by 10 or we might be losing by 10. You could not tell from how the Japanese were playing what the score is. I can go to many games around the world or in the U.S., and I can tell you the score before even looking at the scoreboard because of how the players are playing. The Japanese will play hard till the last pitch, to the last out. So I think, you know, it's interesting to watch how they do things. And the other thing they do that I think that is fascinating is, and it's so simple, is they just train a lot. You know, if we take 100 ground balls a day, they take 200. If we take 200, they take 400. They train so much. They're so fundamentally fit. They're strong, flexible. They've got great work ethics that it carries on into their games, because when they play the game, it's all about instincts. And instinctively, they just do things right away. They don't have to think about it because they've done it so many times. So I think that we can learn a lot from them. Now, your flip side, you know, we're talking a lot about, this isn't a show about pitch counts or pitching kids too much. But on the flip side, you definitely, you know, they pitch guys too much and they realize it. They've heard a lot of players doing it that way. Even though their kids are still physically stronger in the right areas, flexible, you know, they've got the right, they got real good mechanics. They do pitch them too long, and they're looking at that right now in Japan to try to change that a little bit, as we are here in the States, because kids are pitching too much because they're playing for multiple teams. So the Japanese don't do anything perfect. You know, when you look at their hitting, they definitely can change some things in their hitting that, you know, maybe we wouldn't do compared to what they're doing. But overall, what a great system, what a great respect they have for the game, and I think we can learn a lot from them.
Yeah, I've watched over the years, for many decades, how the game has changed in Japan and become more popular, especially now here in the United States. A lot of these Japanese imports players come over here now, and watching the following, not just with the media, but with the fans and the adoration and the respect they get from the fans and the media and the players, though, like you mentioned prior, I just see a very respectful demeanor. They respect everything about the game, the players, the opposition, the coaching. You know, like here in the United States, we have a lot of hotheads that like to get a little bit too into it and go after a pitcher if they get hit by a pitch. I don't see that in the Japanese game pretty much at all. Very rare. They're very, like you said, respectful. They're very gentlemanlike at all costs. Like if one of our pitchers here.
The only time you saw that is on Mr. Baseball with Tom Selleck.
Yeah, of course. It was written that way and not you know. But I see these players, you know, like let's say the pitcher does hit the batter by, you know, and he does apologize and he begs for forgiveness. But over here in the United States, if that pitcher hits the batter, it's like, well, that's just the way it goes. I lost it. You know, it didn't come out of the release of my hand very well. Sorry, that's the way it goes. But the Japanese are just so beg for forgiveness, and I see that over the last couple of decades, and it's very encouraging, and it's very cool. I like it. And they've become just a major part of Major League Baseball as well. I mean, some of those great imports coming over here. And you mentioned too, Pete, about how they take care of their bodies and their health, their regime on that. Just their exercise regime is fantastic. And I noticed when Suzuki came over to the Mariners, the flexibility of his body, it looks like the way they train so much that their bodies, besides bulking up and getting fit as a brick, they're very flexible, like a gymnast. I watched Suzuki, the way he swings, it's like half his body goes one way and this other part of the body goes the opposite way. It's like their bodies are made of rubber. It's really cool, but it just shows you how much they train and the flexibility of how they put things together in their exercise regime.
Yeah, and you wonder, you know, why he can play at, what, 40 years old or whatever age he is.
42. You know,
42. And as a matter of fact, there was an article recently.
But 26 hits shy of 3,000, so, or maybe less than
incredible.
That. I think he got a couple hits against the Padres the other night.
Yeah, and a Hall of Famer. And then they say before he even starts a game, he's got like a 2-hour warm-up.
Yeah. It's amazing. And, the you know, in fact, not just Japan. I mean, the players from Korea and Taiwan, they pretty much follow suit on that. So it's interesting. Now, Pete, you worked a kids instructional camp with Sadahara Ho, of course, the world home run king. And you're going back this summer, you told me earlier, to work the camp again. That had to be a tremendous experience. I mean, tell us about that.
Well, it was obviously a lot of fun. You're talking about a first-class person. This is an individual, when he's walking around anywhere in Japan, he's like the prime minister of Japan. But yet he's so humble and so caring that, you know, we're talking about 100-degree weather, and I don't know what the humidity was. It was just unbelievable how hot it was. He would be out there with the kids, and he'd go to different stations, and he'd work with the kids, and maybe on hitting or fielding, because, you know, we rotated all the kids, and then we had the opportunity to go to dinner with him and ask him about hitting. I've got a video on him talking hitting in Japanese, and we had an interpreter, so we got a chance to ask him questions. I've read his book, which is, if anybody has a chance to read it, it's outstanding. He only has one book. But during the talk at the restaurant, he got on top of the table to try to demonstrate some of the things on hitting. So that's how passionate he was. So to be able to be with an icon like that, and to be able to ask him questions about hitting or how he played the game, those are the experiences that the game gives you. If you stick with it, and we talked earlier about young coaches, if you stick with it and you love what you're doing, times are going to get tough. Sometimes they're going to get good, but stay with it, because most kids nowadays, they want it quick, they want it fast, they want to be in the major leagues as a coach right away. You know, you got to put in your time, you got to learn, and then you're going to get opportunities like this. Because never in my lifetime would I have thought, the first day that my parents, God bless them, they're still alive. My mom and dad sent me to Mickey Owen Baseball School. If it wasn't for them, and they didn't have a lot of money, they put me in the school because they knew that I loved baseball and it was a passion of mine as a young kid. That snowballed everything all the way to getting to Sadahara Ho now, and to be able to meet the home run king and be able to work with him. Yeah, just a tremendous experience.
That's great. I remember an old Jerry Lewis movie he did, and I believe he played... What was it called? The Geisha, I think. And he was, they did that movie around the, the Brooklyn Dodgers were traveling internationally during the offseason. I think they played the Tokyo Giants, and I believe Ho made an appearance in that movie, so that was kind of cool. I always remember that as a kid.
Didn't know that. Interesting.
Yeah. It was a movie in like the late 50s or something like that. But I remember seeing the Japanese team because they were playing the Dodgers, and it was, you know, the comedy was designed about Jerry Lewis trying to, like, he was like a photographer or a journalist or something like that, covering the Dodgers, and it was kind of cool. But they showed the Tokyo Giants, and Sadahara Oh was there, and the whole thing, so it was kind of cool. But
so now I can say I know two actors. Sadaro and Mike Carlucci.
There you go. You're building up your list. two extreme people, though, from different parts of the world. So
that's right. we went from the discipline to the undisciplined, I guess.
Yeah, okay. I'll fetch up to this. I'm the undisciplined, the undisciplined one. So, Pete, speaking of. People that you've worked with all over the world, and you know, a lot of Hall of Famers you've had discussions with, and I've had a lot of coaching seminars with and shared philosophies. Now, as technical commissioner, you worked alongside Hall of Fame manager Tony La Russa at the World Baseball Classic. And what have you learned from him and the things that you've applied to your coaching philosophy?
Well, I'll tell you what, Mike, there's a guy I'd love to get on the show. That might take a little time, maybe in the off season, because I think we have a lot to learn from him. Right. If anybody's out there, you know, you get a chance to get any of his books, he's got a few of them. They're outstanding also. And they're not just baseball books that tell you stories. Sure, they tell you about the baseball games that happen, but it's a learning experience from a coach's standpoint. And for me to hang out with La Russa for a week and work with him, the thing that I learned the most is, how do you interact with people? How do you treat people? You know, I mean, he treated people like he wanted to be treated. He treated people like human beings, like they're equals. He never looked down to anybody. His attention to detail was second to none. So, I mean, he was as organized as anybody that I have ever seen. And he was prepared as well as anybody that I've ever seen. So when it came down to La Russa as a coach or as a manager, it really taught me a lot on how to prepare for a game, how to prepare for a practice, how to make sure that you don't skip anything, how to make sure you don't skip anybody. Daily, he would communicate to everybody all the time. And it just made you feel like you're part of the team, even if you weren't a big part of the club. So there was also another great learning experience for me that I hope to share, you know, throughout my podcast in the game of baseball.
By the way, that movie was called The Geisha Boy. I want to make sure. I think I said The Geisha, but it was The Geisha Boy, 1958, Jerry Lewis. And Suzanne Plachette was in the movie as well. So there you go, little movie trivia that had involved baseball, both major leagues and Japanese baseball. So now, Pete, Tony La Russa, fantastic. I mean, this guy, he was with the Oakland A's. First of what, Chicago White Sox, Oakland A's. And then, of course, he led his World Series teams to the championship there in 1989, and then he went over to the Cardinals and got a couple of World Series pennants there, World Series championships. And this guy now is over at the Arizona Diamondbacks trying to turn them into a winner, and he's had a couple of snags, though, I guess, because the injuries, which, of course, you have talked about this before, is, you know, you got to have good health, you have to have good exercise regime, and to keep yourself fully you know, injury-free if you can. But La Russa has always been lucky. Most of his teams have always been injury-free. But, boy, this Arizona Diamondbacks team, they've been hit by the injury bug.
Yeah, they have. And you think about it, because they've really put together, at the beginning here, a pretty good club. And if it wasn't for the injuries, they'd be doing a lot better. But, you know, anytime you take over a new organization, that takes time. You notice the Chicago Cubs here in Chicago. Theo Epstein's done a fantastic job. Not only did he come from Boston, do a great job, he came here. But it didn't take 1 year, it didn't take two. You know, it's been three, almost 4 years now to where they've gotten to be the best, not only best major league team, but also the best minor league system. And I'll tell you what, knowing La Russa and knowing his good friend and our good friend, Roland Heeman, you're going to see them at the top pretty soon here, pretty quick, because they will build a great foundation there in Arizona.
Right. Now, Pete, as we're getting ready here to get to the final turn here on our show, on your show, I should say, If young players have the goal to be the best player they can be and advance to the highest level of the sport, what advice do you have for these young people and their parents for them to reach those goals?
Well, I think you brought up a couple of points I thought that were very good also. I think number one, you got to let them play the game. As parents, let them play the game. They're going to make mistakes. They've got to learn on their own a little bit. Don't always be there constantly telling them what to do. You know, always be there and support. Go to their games. After a ball game, tell them, hey, I love watching you play. That's it. You don't have to talk about, what they did right, what they did wrong. Let the coaches discuss that. If you want to tell them what they did right, that's pretty good. I mean, there's nothing wrong with that. I think that would be helpful. But at the same time, be the support staff as a parent and as a player. If it's your goal, you got to give. If that's what you love to do is play baseball, then you've got to do it all the time. You've got to do it every day. You've got to spend time getting better constantly on your own. Don't wait for your coaches to always be teaching you. You teach yourself. Go out and take ground balls. Go out and take a hit on your own. The real special players that I found were the guys and gals that they were practicing when nobody was looking. They weren't only practicing when the coaches were looking, but they were doing things on their own. And I think the other thing is take a break once in a while. Be a kid, especially if you're real young. Be a kid and just do something else. Even though you love the game, take a little break, enjoy yourself, because, the game's going to be there. I've seen a lot of guys that didn't start playing baseball till they were 11, 12 years old that have gone to do great things. So it's not like you have to start the game at 8 years old. But love what you're doing. Respect the game. Play it hard. Practice a lot. Make sure to educate yourself. Educate yourself in the right things. So that way you, as a player, can be a better player because you now understand how to train yourself better. So don't depend on the coaches. You go out and you educate yourself on how do I get better as a fielder, as a runner, as a hitter, as a pitcher, whatever it may be, whatever the skill, how do I get better at it? And ultimately, be a great teammate. Because I can tell you this, when I was picking players for the national team, the number one thing I wanted to see is how good were your grades and what kind of teammate were you? And if you ask any college coach around the country, if your goal is to become a college player after high school, the number one thing they're going to ask when they ask a high school teacher or coach about that player, they're going to ask, what's his grades or what are her grades? And the second thing, what kind of person are they? They're not worried about the skills because they got an idea of your skills. They're worried about what kind of person you are. And what do we mean by being a great teammate? Do you honestly want your teammates to do better? Are you cheering for them? Even though you're sitting down, you're not playing that day. Are you cheering for them, and are you honestly cheering? Not are you just cheering just to make it look good, but are you a great teammate when it comes to that? Are you there to support your teammates? Those things are all attributes, I think, that make a great player. So for now, I just want to leave all our players, coaches, and parents, around the world with that advice. I hope that helped a little bit. We hope that the show has helped you, gain some perspective of a greater game out there when it comes to a global game, and hopefully some teaching aspects that can help you also make yourself better. And Michael, I got to tell you, and I know you go by Mike. I have a tendency to call you Michael. I think it's Michael Corleone. I think that's why the Italians always get noticed in all the mob movies.
Pete, I wanted to say your advice has been supreme all show long and great stuff. But let me say, my dad, who was a coach of our 1972 Little League team, we won the championship. My dad was a great coach, very good disciplined guy, but he put instruction and strategy and discipline, mixed it all in. And we were 0-3, and my dad came in to help coach, and we won 13 straight games, including the championship games. And we won the championship for our Little League. And by the way, the team I played for was the Cubs.
Interesting.
My dad always, though, had, when he was coaching, he coached a couple other years too, he always said that practice makes perfect.
You know what? Yeah, when we could almost end on that.
Yes.
And you know what? Not only are we going to end on that, but the thing I really wanted to mention is, with your busy schedule, Mike, the thing I was going to say earlier is I really appreciate your time, your friendship. When I'm with you, I laugh all the time, and I think we don't have enough of that in our lives. You're such a professional but at the same time, you make people laugh. And I think that's a unique quality. I think that's why you've been successful in everything you've done. And I know what I'm hoping. I'm hoping we can do some more shows together, even maybe interview you and I interview other people in the future.
Well, that would be fantastic. You know, Pete, first off, I've always enjoyed your friendship. It was fantastic to meet you, you know, a couple of decades ago when we worked on these international events together. You're a great friend. You're like a brother to me, and you've been a fantastic coach. I've seen your work out there. You've done supreme work, and your advice and your book is fantastic. All parents and all youngsters should get this book and follow it step by step. I mean, to enjoy this great game of baseball, you got to do it the Pete Caliendo way. That's the only way. And Pete, like I said, it's been great knowing you. And let's continue on down the road. Let's do another show together. I mean, I've had tons of fun here. I appreciate you letting me, you know, join you. And I guess I could say take the microphone from you for an hour. And it's been supreme. It's been fun. And I hope to do this again real soon.
Fantastic. And folks, everybody around the world, thank you for joining us. I want to thank all of you from both your host, Pete Caliendo, and also my good friend, Mike Carlucci. Two Italians want to say that we've enjoyed the show. Before we leave, we want everybody listening to the show to remember, send us your email on anything you want to talk about, but help us with getting the show out. We're at Twitter, at Inside Pitch Show. Again, the Twitter is at Inside Pitch Show. There's a lot of tips that we send out on Twitter, so you want to get to that Twitter because every day you're going to get tips about learning the game. You can also go to our Facebook page, facebook.com/InsidePitchShow. And then go to our website, InsidePitchPodcast.com. Lots of instructional information, ways to contact us. We appreciate if you can take all that social media and spread it around because that really helps increase the show and not only make it better, but continue the show. Don't forget, email me anytime at peter@InsidePitchPodcast.com. Don't forget, go to iTunes and Stitcher. If you like the show, give us a 5-star rating. That really helps us continue the show. And remember, coaches' education is the key to building the foundation of our sport. So keep getting smarter. Thanks for listening to the show that interviews baseball coaches all over the world that have innovative thoughts, and they also like to challenge the status quo. I'm your host, Pete Caliendo. Have a great coaching day, and see you on the next show.
This has been the Inside Pitch with Peter Caliendo. Listen online at InsidePitchPodcast.com and subscribe on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, and all major podcast outlets. Join the conversation on Facebook and Twitter and get all of our podcasts now at lineupmedia.fm.